Well, welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I've got a treat in store. I'm planning to visit by telephone with Lefty Driesell and to talk about his upcoming induction in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. And also, he's excited because he and our friend Charlie Scott are going to be inducted at the same time. And the expert on all of this is Art Chansky. And Art, you are generous to agree to come talk to us a little bit about both these guys and about the excitement that we'll feel about their induction in the Hall of Fame. I should say that you are the author of the great book, Game Changers, Dean Smith, Charlie Scott, and the era that transformed a Southern collegiate town. Thanks for sharing your wisdom with us. What do you think about this?
Oh, I think it's great, DG. I mean, it's full circle. I mean, Charlie likes to say if there was no Lefty Driesell, there'd be no Charlie Scott. Now, Lefty discovered him, and that led to the great recruiting battle that Dean Smith won. I'm not sure he wouldn't have been discovered otherwise, but the fact that he's going into the Hall of Fame with Lefty at the to kind of cap their careers is just fantastic.
It's interesting to me, of course, that Lefty and Charlie have developed a strong friendship over the years, and that Charlie says, particularly after Coach Smith's death, that he calls Lefty for reminiscing and also for advice about current life.
Yeah, I mean, when he decided to go to Carolina, it really had nothing to do with picking Dean Smith over Lefty Driesell. It had to do with picking Chapel Hill over Davidson. And I think what he said to Coach Smith was, or what he said to Lefty, he said, Lefty, I love you the best, but Chapel Hill's just a better place for me to go to school. And he was worried about it being more liberal than Davidson was. He was worried about it being closer to Durham and the black community in Durham than Davidson was to Charlotte. So those are the things that Charlie was a very forward thinker for his age, and those are some of the things he was considering.
Well, as Lefty talks about all the time, that Charlie Scott was one of the smartest students that he'd ever recruited. And Charlie is still pretty smart. He's, why do you think these two people are have been selected for the Hall of Fame, and were they selected as soon as they should have been?
No, I don't. I think Charlie Scott certainly should have been selected earlier, and Lefty never went to a Final Four, never won a national championship, but he certainly won enough games and coached at, I guess, four different schools. So he deserves it. And there was a movement, I understand, a movement by some of his former players, including you, to get him into the Hall of Fame. And I would not be surprised if the Hall of Fame put them in together, not coincidentally.
Oh, that's interesting. Coach Driesell gives Mike Krzyzewski a lot of credit for advancing his name, which is, and of course, Lefty did go to Duke. I think would have liked to have coached at Duke if the door had been open.
Sure, he was one of the final candidates when they chose Bucky Waters. It was between Bucky Waters, Lefty Driesell, and UB Brown and Chuck Daly, and they picked Bucky Waters.
Well, you just stopped talking. Why? It worked out okay, didn't it?
I like Bucky. I've known Bucky for a long time, and he's a wonderful guy. But history shows it turned out to be the wrong choice.
The rap on Lefty is that this is not the rap, but I think the good thing is that he didn't go to Duke or didn't go to UCLA. He went to a school that was without a great basketball tradition, and then went to the, had gone to Davidson, which was in the doldrums, then to James Madison and to Georgia State, and that each of those schools, he turned them into winners.
Yes, and Maryland, I think he recognized, it's very ironic that the last game he coached at Davidson was at the University of Maryland's Cole Fieldhouse when Charlie Scott hit the buzzer beater to send Carolina to its third straight Final Four. The next very day, he met with Jim Kehoe, the athletic director of Maryland, and took the Maryland job. And so he coached at Cole Fieldhouse his last game with Davidson, and and he started his career at the Sam Cole Fieldhouse. And he recognized Maryland as being a sleeping giant in basketball. First of all, Lefty had no doubt about his ability to recruit. And when he brought in Len Elmore and Jap Trimble and that class, and then on registration day in College Park, Maryland, who shows up but Tom McMillan? Instead of showing up in Chapel Hill. So there's so many intricacies that are entwined in this story. It's quite amazing. But Lefty also recognized that that Maryland was in a great recruiting area and a great area for sports and basketball if they could win, which John Thompson at Georgetown proved as well. And so I think he had great foresight about that. And he turned out to making Maryland not quite the UCLA of the East, which was the slogan that was given to him, but he came pretty close. And he coached in what today is still, no question, the greatest game in ACC basketball history, and some people say the greatest game in college basketball history, that being the 1974 ACC championship overtime game against David Thompson and NC State.
Well, Argenti, thanks for your introduction. I'm looking forward to talking to Lefty by telephone. In the meantime, if anybody's curious about these events, the best thing to do is to buy a copy of Game Changers, your book about Charlie Scott, Dean Smith, and how it changed our community. Stick with us. We'll be right back to talk to Lefty Drizzell. Welcome to Talking. This is D.G. Martin talking to my favorite basketball coach, Lefty Drizzell, who has recently been selected to join the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Coach, congratulations.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you very much. And you helped me get there.
Well, you had some really strong friends. Who was the person who pushed the hardest?
I don't know. A lot of people are. Lon Babby, who was my lawyer at Maryland, and Mike Krzyzewski really helped, I think. He helped. And,
why would Krzyzewski?
I don't know. You know, all my players that win games for me.
Yeah.
that's what got me in there.
Well, it was a little bit late in coming. I loved you know, you've always had the positive attitude about things, and the truth is that you should have been in the Hall of Fame about 30 years ago. And when somebody asked you to comment about that, you said, well, it's really great, because if I'd gotten in 10 years ago or 20 years ago, nobody would know who I was. But now I get this honor now when I'm, you know, when my main times have passed and people know who I am. How did you come up with that?
I don't know. It's true. I was just, you know, thinking about something to say, and I didn't want to say I was, you know, mad because I didn't get in or disappointed. And so I think it's true, really. I mean, I got people coming over now to see me and say, can I come see you, Coach? I just want to get a picture. In fact, I bought some furniture down here for my beach house the other day, and I needed two little mats to put on the front door. And he said, well, if I can get a picture with you, I'll give you the mats free.
No,
said,
you're
okay,
kidding.
That's a deal.
So you're
now, if I'd have gotten into Hall of Fame, you know, in 2002 when I retired, he wouldn't even know who I was. So it's worked out pretty good.
Coach, the other story that interested me is that you there's another person I want to say that you almost coached who's entering the Hall of Fame at the same time.
Charlie Scott, yeah. That's amazing. I didn't even know it. We were when at the Final Four, we had to go get measured for our ring that we're going to wear, and a coach that they're going to give us a Hall of Fame coach. And Charlie was in there. I didn't realize he was going to be there. And it was great. I spent a lot of time with him at the Final Four. He's a great guy.
Well, he is quoted as saying, if it weren't for Lefty Drizzell, there wouldn't be a Charlie Scott. Now, Charlie Scott never played for you, so what's he talking about? What's that story?
Well, you see, I signed Charlie. I mean, I got a letter of intent that he signed. It didn't mean anything. It was
But this was when
Davidson
you were at Davidson. At Davidson.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was the first one to offer him a scholarship because there were no African-American players in the ACC or the Southern Conference, or maybe in the Southern Conference at West Virginia there were. But, you know, Charlie was the first African-American player. In fact, the second African-American student to ever come to Davidson. So when he signed with me, I mean, you know, he came to all of our games and so forth. And when Mike Malloy came down for a visit, Charlie entertained him for the weekend. And they were all set up to be roommates at Davidson. And then, you know, soon as Charlie signed with me, then everybody else started recruiting. Wake Forest and North Carolina and Duke, all of them started recruiting him. And that's what he means by that. That, you know, I got his name out there because nobody knew who Charlie was until I signed him.
How did you find him?
I think
him?
That's what he means.
How did you find him? Where did he pop up? Because as you mentioned,
I'll tell you how I found him. What was the guy that coached at Lenoir, Ryan Wells? Was it Wells? My memory.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, too.
Billy Wells or Tommy Wells or something. He was a coach at Lenoir, Ryan. And I knew him. He was a good friend of mine. I can't think of his name right now. I'm sorry. But anyway, he called me one day. He said, they left it. There's an African-American kid playing at Laurinburg Institute. We played him last night. He said, he is the truth. He said, you ought to start recruiting him. And that's when I did. But he was the first time I saw Charlie play was at Hillside High School where John Lucas's dad was the principal. And, he was something else as a high school player. He's great. But Billy Wells, I think, is the coach at Lenoir Ryan, was the first one that told me about him.
Well, Coach, you saw him play, and you said, I'd like to have him on my team. But take yourself back to those days of the mid-1960s, and as you pointed out, if it was an African-American player, it was a rarity. And at Davidson was hardly desegregated. And why did you think?
Yeah, that's true.
What was going through your mind, and who did you have to touch base with, and how did the town react to this in the middle of a segregated college in a segregated town? And you grew up in that environment as well. But what made you think, okay, I can bring African American player onto my team and people are going to accept it?
Well, at the time, it was legal to recruit or for black African American students to come to Davidson. And I had always thought it was ridiculous. When Charlie Scott decided to come to Davidson, see, the song at Davidson used was Dixie, Are You From Dixie? That was their fight song.
Right.
And so somebody said, you know, I got to thinking that we can't be singing that with Charlie coming here. And so I went to your dad and I said, let's knock that off, get another sign, a song. I don't know what they're doing now. I said, that's going to be embarrassing to Charlie. And so he did. He changed the song.
Well,
so Charlie had a pretty good effect on Davidson, really. And I, you know, he used to work my camp, and he and I have been friends for a long time. He calls me all the time.
I want to forgive me. I'm just so interested in that transformative time of that you're talking about. The time you were recruiting Charlie Scott was a time of change in the South, where
right.
more and more people, you know, you look at when I was there playing for you, we played the University of Alabama, and as you remember, beat them twice. Maybe you don't
right.
remember, but I do remember it. And that was kind of a big thing for us to beat Alabama. They were a great football powerhouse. Didn't have a bad basketball team then, but there wasn't an African-American in sight in the stands or on the bench or anything. It was an all-white game. That was in 1961, I guess, 62.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, within 3 or 4 years, you're out there recruiting black players. And it just What happened during that time that opened that door?
So for me, growing up in Norfolk, which is sort of in the South, you know, I never looked at them as being a different color. They were my friends. And then when they said they could come to Davidson, you know, it was okay to come to Davidson and Coach Wells, I'm pretty sure that was his name.
He
I hope
said
I'm not calling
to...
him wrong. Told me about Charlie that I went to see him play, and it wasn't down my mind I was recruiting, but nobody else was recruiting him, see, until I signed him. I should have kept it a secret.
Well, this
because
is...
when I put it in the Charlotte Observer that I had signed Charlie Scott, an African-American, you know, then everybody starts looking at him because they knew I knew how to recruit.
Well, we'll talk some more about this. If you join us late, I'm visiting with basketball coach Lefty Driesell. He's just been been selected to join the Hall of Fame in just a few months. Coach Driesell, I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Driesell. Coach Driesell has recently been elected to the Hall of Fame. He'll be inducted in a few months. Coach Driesell, we were talking before the break. Charlie Scott, who's also joining the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame this fall, says that without Lefty Driesell, there would have never been a Charlie Scott. And I thought that was an incredible tribute coming from somebody who, you know, who folks at Davidson have been disappointed with and continue to be. They continue to talk about it 50 years later.
Charlie's a great friend of mine and always has been, even though he didn't come. See, I feel like I kind of raised him a little bit. Because he was a Davidson signee for about 6 months or so. And in fact, he applied early. See, he was valedictorian of his class at Laurinburg and outstanding student. And so he applied early admission to Davidson and was accepted and put down a $100 deposit. So he was a Davidson student for a while. Not a student, but whatever.
Some of us have been brought up in the...
Yeah, I know.
Culturally segregated. These guys came in, and in addition to being star basketball players, many of them were also just wonderful people, and it kind of helped move the desegregation effort, the civil rights movement. That was kind of another side of it, that there were these people who were grabbing us by the hand and saying, "Hey, we're not, you know, don't worry about it. We're okay too," and that the
right,
if it hadn't,
right.
that the athletics and these black players who came in and were stars brought a lot of segregationists around to a new way of thinking about it. I think about that all the time, but that was just part of your life. You were trying to get good basketball players to play for you.
Right. You know, these guys nowadays, because you shoot with your left hand very much.
I was left-handed.
With your right hand then.
I wasn't much good shooting with either hand, but I was terrible on the right side going in for a left.
I know. I couldn't shoot much with my right, but, I mean, nobody could stop me going left, so I didn't have to. But anyway, the way these kids today, you know, can shoot with left hand, right hand, three-point shots from 30 feet out, you know, they just practiced more. You can't tell me that Curry and LeBron James and those great players, they're not different from anybody else. They've just practiced more. And Charlie Scott the same way, or, you know. It's just that they practice more.
Yeah, I think that explains a lot of it, too. The other thing that I think folks would be interested in your view about talking about the draft and about the what's going on in professional basketball. Are you a fan of professional basketball? Do you like to watch it?
I watch it, but I'm not a big. I'm amazed at some of the things that these kids can do. You know, like LeBron James is a 6'8" point guard, really. And that would never happen when I played. If you were 6'8", you were a postman. Even most of I never had any guards that were as big as he was or he is. And so I love watching. I love watching Curry. Curry amazes me because a lot of people that don't follow him see when I watch Curry play, I just watch him. I don't watch the other.
Oh, really?
Other nine players or eight players.
What is it about that?
Him on offense, defense, when he's dribbling the ball. And the kid is amazing. And not just because he went to Davidson, but I mean, he's a heck of a passer. He can rebound. He gets a lot of rebounds. And he's a little guy, but he's amazing. And you know that he has worked at his game because of Dale, his daddy. And that's why he can do all those things. All those drills that you see him do before game, Pete Maravich did those when he worked in my camp with Charlie Scott. I mean, but most players, most kids, they don't spend that much time dribbling the basketball or passing it or whatever. I used to see Pete Maravich standing. You remember at the end of Johnson Gym, we had a big cement wall. And he was standing about 5 feet away and throw it behind his back, left-handed and right-handed. He could work his way back to half court and throw the ball. And he had a spot on the wall, and he could throw it and make it hit that spot from half court with his left hand and his right hand behind his back. And that's what Curry does, all that stuff now. Plus, he's a great shooter, too.
If you join us late, I'm visiting with basketball coach Lefty Driesell, headed for the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My coach is Coach Lefty Driesell. If you did join us late, Coach Driesell coached at four different schools, including Davidson, Maryland, James Madison, Georgia State, took all his teams to the NCAA tournament, won 100 games at each of those schools. I believe, Coach, that nobody else has done that.
I don't know. Maybe Cliff Ellis, I think, has done it now. Cliff Ellis won 100 games. I don't know if he took them all to the NCAA.
Well, it's an amazing record, and we're doing this broadcast, Coach, to celebrate that recognition and achievement. And earlier, for people in Chapel Hill would be interested, if they don't know that Charlie Scott is also going to join Coach Driesell in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Charlie Scott said, Coach, and we won't talk about this anymore, but just for people who joined us late, what Charlie Scott said is when he found out that he was going to be in the Hall of Fame with Lefty Driesell, he said, if it weren't for Lefty Driesell, there wouldn't be a Charlie Scott. And those of you who missed Coach Driesell's and my conversation about it, you can pick that up on chapelborough.com. Coach, we've been talking a little bit about the pro game, and I gathered from your attitude that you like to watch the individual players like Stephen Curry in the Pro Hall of Fame, but there is one pro player who some people say is the greatest player ever, and that's sort of heresy here in Chapel Hill because folks here would say that Michael Jordan is the greatest player ever, and he was pretty good, but is James better than is he the all-time best player in your mind?
Well, you know, of course, I coached against Michael Jordan for 4 years, and he was a great player. But physically, you know, LeBron James is so much bigger and stronger. And I don't know, Michael Jordan was a great leaper. But I think if they had a jumping contest, I think LeBron James might win. And LeBron James might be a better passer, than Jordan. I don't know if he's a better. Jordan was a great shooter and a great passer, too. But some of the passes that that LeBron James throws are unbelievable. And, you know, he is a better rebounder than Michael. I don't know. If I had to pick between the two, I'd like to have both of them. It's hard for me to say one's better than the other, but they're both great, great players. And, you know, it's hard to say which one's the best.
Well, speaking of having both of them on the same team, there's some controversy, and I don't know whether you are watching this or have a comment about it, about loading up some of the great teams with more great players and leaving other teams behind competitively. Is like with LeBron James going to Los Angeles, they're picking up other stars, and then in San Francisco, instead of just resting on their laurels, they're trying to pick up other stars. And does that? I mean, if you were the coach, you'd be doing the same thing, wouldn't you? You'd be trying to get as many good players.
Yeah, I would. I mean, you know, I don't blame them, but and I don't blame the players either. So in some ways, you know, I think the players ought to stay where they are. Just like in college, I don't like this idea that a senior, if he graduates, can transfer and not sit out. I don't like that because, I mean, if if Mike Malloy or, you know, Dick Snyder or some of them were to, graduate and then transfer, I'd have really been upset. So, I think it's, in the pros, it's a business and you're trying to make money, so I guess it's okay to go ahead and get more money and go somewhere else.
Well, you said earlier that you didn't say you weren't interested in the pro game, but you said when you watched it, you watched the individual players rather than cheering for any particular team. What about
it? Well, I do watch the offenses. And see, I don't like the offense that most pros play right now. There's very few big men that can score with their back to the basket. All the big men, they want to pull outside and shoot threes. And they always, most of the time, you watch, there'll be some pro summer games on tonight, I'll watch them. But they don't even have anybody in the post. Most of the time, it's two guys in the corner, two guys on the wing, and then a point guard. And some, you know, somebody will flash it into the post. I mean, they'll just clear out the side for LeBron, and he'll just back you down in there. But he doesn't start out in the post, so the game has changed. Most of my coaching career, the only way you could get 3 points was if a postman got a layup and got fouled, then he got 3 points because you never fouled a shooter that shot outside. So that's one reason I ran a double post offense, because that's the way we could score 3 points. You couldn't score it. Nobody ever fouled a jump shooter. And so the game has changed. I don't particularly like, you know, for example, I don't think there was but maybe one or two NBA teams this year that didn't average 100 points a game. Well, if you go average 100 points a game, somebody not playing defense somewhere. I mean, they can't guard anybody. Of course, they're more skilled offensively than the players are. But I like to watch players that play defense and, you know, get the ball inside the postman. And there's not too many, you know, postmen in the NBA that score a lot of points. Well, some of them do, but very few.
Well, you pointed out that LeBron James, who is, you know, built to be a postman, plays guard. I mean, he can do anything.
He brings the ball up the court. Now, he'll post you up sometime, and he just brings the ball up the court and takes it to the hole, and nobody messes about getting in front of him. You know, being a basketball player today, you got to really be in shape. I'm talking about, you know, they lift and waist to be able to jump higher, to be stronger, be better rebounders, and they have the guys that make a lot of money have dietitians and, you know, make sure they're eating right and hopefully getting in a rest. And so to be a basketball player in the NBA, you got to be a great athlete.
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Coach Lefty Driesell. Coach Driesell has just been elected to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Coach Lefty Drizel, recently elected to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Congratulations again, Coach. A lot of your friends here.
Well, thank you. When I started coaching in 1955 as a JV coach, I never thought I'd be in the Naismith Hall of Fame. So it's just a great honor and something I'm very, very proud of.
Well, those of us...
And I'm proud of... See, I've said this when they told me I was going to get in, that it's not just for me, because I never got a rebound. As a player, I'm not getting in. I'm getting in as a coach. Well, as a coach, you're just as good as your players. So really, it's an honor for my players more than it is for me. And so I had great players at Davidson, you know, and they want me to speak for 5 minutes in January at the introduction, when you get introduced or whatever it is. But, you know, I would like to say all the great players that I had at Davidson and Maryland and JMU and Georgia State, but I couldn't do that in 5 minutes. So I'm trying to, they want me to give them a speech that I'm going to give in 5 minutes. And I'm having a hard time deciding what to say, because if I start naming names,
yeah,
and I leave somebody out that was a really good player, and you know, you can't have a final top 10 team without good substitutes. You know, if I got 12, 14 guys at Davidson, I only had 11. But all 11 of those guys were very important to me. And win it just as much as Dick Snyder and Mike Malloy and Fred Hensel and all the others and yourself. So, you know, I don't know what I'm going to say. I still haven't made up my mind.
Well, I'll be interested, Coach, to see what you know, with your 5 minutes allotted. And, of course, as you mentioned, if you start mentioning names, you've had so many great players, many of whom – probably are under, you know, underappreciated that you'd like to mention. All of us would say, well, why didn't he mention me?
And I know, that's what I'm saying. And so I can't say, you know, everybody's name. And if I just say the All-Americans' names, well, they were good. But it's just like I'm a little ticked off at Davidson, since you're from Davidson.
Yeah.
Because when I was there, I put up a banner for every year were in the top 10. You remember that?
Yeah. No, Coach, just don't get started on that. Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, I know what I said. Because it honors the players, not me. And just like the Hall of Fame honors the players, not me. You see what I'm saying?
Well, Coach, we're working on that. But it is, it's an interesting kind of thing in college. And I follow the, of course, Davidson and Carolina mostly, but there's been no – but I watch when a new coach comes in to any school.
Right.
And not just any coach, but many coaches, they want to be the center of it, and that the worship of the old coaches isn't a part of it. Now, the smart coaches – and you'll see this at Carolina in their museum. They of course, go back to Coach Smith, but they also go back to Frank McGuire, and they even go back to Coach Tom Scott. You know, I mean, it's a litany of tradition rather than just the coach who's there now. So, anyway,
well, I tell you something. Carolina does the best job of all the universities I know, better than Duke or UCLA or any of them, because they honor a lot of people. You know, see, I get on them at Maryland because they don't have up Adrian Branch or, you know, Brad Davis, who's in the NBA Hall of Fame, because I don't know why, but they don't. But, you know, at Carolina, they put anybody that was a good player, they put a banner up for them, which I think is smart. And then that thing that they play in timeouts about Michael Jordan says, I got Carolina fever. Well, Maryland's doing one of those this year because I just made a tape.
Oh, is that right?
They kind of copying Carolina, which I think North Carolina does a great job of, you know, giving credit to all of their players and coaches and so forth.
Well, Coach, you're just about out of time, but I've got on my list of things. One is that I get to see Lenny Rosenblum from time to time, one of the great heroes who is continued to live here, but has continued to be recognized as a part of that Carolina tradition. And he says, he says the nicest things about you. He said he and his wife are big Lefty Driesell fans, and I don't know where that.
Well, that's because I say a lot of good things about him. Listen, a lot of North Carolina fans do not realize this. Frank McGuire coached the only undefeated team in Carolina's great basketball tradition, and Lenny Rosenbluth was the star. I mean, he wasn't good; he was great. And in fact, you see, he was a freshman at North Carolina when I was a senior at Duke. So I started hearing about him in 54. And they said, oh, man, we got this guy over at North Carolina, Lenny Rosenbluth. He's averaging 30 points a game on a freshman team. You know, so I've heard about him a long time, and he was a great player.
Well, he's a great person, great for us to have around as well. Now, Coach, you went to Duke, and you've given Coach Krzyzewski some credit for helping your cause in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, he did. He certainly did.
But what do you think about this one-and-done game that he's got going on and other coaches? Is that good for basketball?
Well, I think they're going to change the rule. Yeah, I mean, look, when I was recruiting, I recruited the best players in the country that I could get, right? Well, you can't turn down a great player that wants to come to Duke, you know, or North Carolina. Roy's not turning down any great players that he thinks will go one, you know. I think it's a stupid rule. I have said it for many, many years. I coached Moses Malone, who was the first one to go from high school to the NBA or to an ABA. He went. But he was the first guy to go straight from high school to the pros. And look, you know, LeBron James did it. Kobe Bryant did it. I think it's ridiculous to make a kid go to college for a year if he doesn't want to go. If he wants to go, good, great. But if you were my son and you could get $4 million, $10 million to go and not go to college, listen, when Moses Malone went pro, I made him put, because I loved Moses and I wanted him to get an education. In his contract, you can look it up, he got $20,000 for every credit, or might have been 10, I don't know what it was, a lot of money, for every credit he passed, college credit he passed. And he did go to summer school about one summer. But then after that, he was making so much money, he didn't need to go to college.
We got no money at all. But I mean, going back to Moses Malone, would he have had a better life had he had it year two, three, or even graduated from college, so that he'd have a life after he got out of professional basketball? Or if
no, Moses Malone never drank a bit of liquor, never smoked marijuana, never. He was a strong Christian guy, and I tell you what, he was playing basketball about the year when he passed out. In fact, I was to go to dinner with him. He was at the Naismith Hall of Fame, and he came back to Norfolk to play in a golf tournament. And every year he did that, he and I went out to dinner. And I had a date to go out to dinner with him with one of his best friends from Petersburg that night, and his friend went to the motel to pick him up, to come pick me up. We were going to go to dinner. And so about 7 o'clock that morning, he called me and he said, Coach, I got some bad news. I said, what is it? He said, Moses is in the motel room dead.
Oh, my God.
So he died right in Virginia Beach, and I was going to go to dinner with him that night.
Well, I hate to end the program on that sad note, except that it emphasizes that even with players like Charlie Scott or Moses Malone, who you recruited and loved, when they didn't come sign up for you, you stuck with them. And, Coach, you stuck with me. You stuck with so many of your players. I want to thank you, and congratulations on the Hall of Fame. It's a great
– Well, thank you, DJ, and good congratulations to you to be a great guy, great administrator, you know.
Thanks, Coach. Our guest
and a politician.
Yeah, there you go. Our guest has been Coach Lefty Driscoll. Thanks, Tim, and to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking. I'll be back before you know it.